Hi, I'm Michael Apple for BizNews.com. Freedom Under Law this morning released a report titled Serving the Judiciary, a review of the activities of the South African Judicial Service Commission 2009 to 2022. Freedom Under Law's lead researcher on the report, Kelly Solik, joins me now to unpack the importance of this report and why it's proven so difficult to get to grips with the performance of the JSE. Kelly, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Most South Africans know we have judges, we have magistrates, we have justices who sit as neutral arbiters in civil or criminal matters. Their purpose is to make sure that the interests of society are balanced with the scales of justice as set out in our laws. The judiciary is one of the three arms of the state, and the doctrine of separation of powers means it acts as a check and balance on the other arms of the state. Who sits as magistrates or judges or justices is incredibly important, but how they get to those positions is somewhat more complicated and opaque. Kelly, before we get to the report, I just want to go back to the apartheid days where judges were appointed by what your report calls the tap on the shoulder system, where the executive, the justice minister or the president exclusively held the power to appoint judges. What did South Africa's new dispensation come up with to counter this very obvious executive overreach, and how is it all supposed to work?
So what the South African system does is we've developed a body called the Judicial Service Commission, and they represent all the different arms of government, as well as legal practitioners and academics. And it's designed to be an all-inclusive body that, when functioning properly, is a better way of involving everyone in the appointment of judges.
Okay, so we know in theory then how the JSC is supposed to work and who's supposed to comprise the JSC. Has it worked as well as we'd hoped in balancing that executive, political, professional interest in deciding who gets appointed?
So I think that was one of the things we found in the report, and one of the recommendations is that there seems to be a bit of an imbalance as regards political appointees. And I'd have highlighted that of the 23 members, I think it is, of the JSC, only 8 actually have to have legal training. So there does seem to be a little bit of a disjunct in the people who are selecting judges and their kind of experience and background. And we've also repeatedly seen recent instances of political interference in the interview process. So highly publicized instances of that recently.
The JSC is supposed to conduct itself with a necessary degree of transparency, openness, responsiveness. Now, judging by this morning's press conference, transparency in the term of filing annual reports, it doesn't bode well for the JSC in making information public and available and easily and readily available to organizations like yourselves. Has that proved to be a real problem?
Yeah, so I think as a researcher, this was probably the most telling point for me, because when we set about to do what I had initially thought would be a relatively simple task of compiling a list of who had served on the commission, a list of who they had interviewed and when, a list of their annual reports, we realized that this information was just not available. And to the extent that it was available, it was stored in kind of disparate sources, some of it on the Department of Justice website, some of it on the Office of Chief Justice's website. There's no central repository for any of their information. And I think the fact that they've failed to file annual reports is symptomatic of kind of a twofold problem. The first is either that they just lack capacity to prepare, submit, and publish those, or that there's just no appetite to comply with their constitutional obligation of openness and accountability. And I think it's a combination of those things. We've definitely addressed the fact in the report repeatedly that there seems to be quite a severe problem of lack of capacity. I think specifically with dealing with complaints and being able to make information available.
If members of the public had watched the, I can call them infamous JSC public interviews. You know, these are hour-long things that are publicized and streamed on television. Members of the public would perhaps be remiss to think that this is the first stage at which potential candidates are then whittled down by the JSC. But there's actually a 7-person sifting committee that sits behind closed doors prior to these public hearings. And your report says one might expect the sifting committee to be a microcosm reflective of the broader JSC constituency. But you have some concerns around the composition of the sifting committee.
Yes. So interestingly, I think for most people, even within the legal world, they kind of, we assume that if you apply and are a relatively suitable candidate, you'll get an interview, and that we don't think too much about the process that happened before that. But as I say, we did, and it is reported in the annual report. Although, because we haven't been able to locate annual reports before, I think it's the 2017 to 2018 year in terms of the period under review, we can't say for certain how that sifting committee was composed then. But for us, for now, in the latest report, we've seen it's a 7-person committee. There's no indication of how that committee is comprised or how people are selected to serve on that committee. And we've found now that of the group of 7 that currently sits, 3 are the president's nominees. So I think it is perhaps overly cynical to say there's no change from the old executive dominated system, but that is a little bit of a cause for concern. We do indicate in the report it hasn't garnered the same sort of attention or resulted in any litigation where someone has, for example, taken the decision of the sifting committee not to interview someone on review. But there's no reason why that may not be an issue in future.
The very often acrimonious nature that these JSC, the public hearings, the interviews that they take. Your report has noted that there have been at least 26 nominated candidates who could have filled vacant positions in the judiciary who chose to withdraw from JSC interview processes. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a huge problem. I think that's the primary issue at the moment with the way that the interviews are conducted or the way they have historically been conducted. People just aren't willing to put themselves through what can sometimes be quite a huge public embarrassment. I mean, we've seen repeatedly candidates being faced with, and we do touch on it in the report, kind of some adverse comment or issue that they've had no notice of or no warning about, and that being pressed. Or completely unfounded allegations that seem to be repeatedly put to them. As I say, we've detailed those instances within the report. But I think people just aren't willing to do it. And if we know that there are at least 26 instances of people withdrawing after being nominated or after being selected for an interview, we can assume that the number of people refusing to even put their names forward for consideration for an interview is even higher than that. So we do have this kind of chilling prospect, this chilling effect on the pool of candidates. And you can often see that where the JSC has happened once or twice in recent history, they aren't able to conduct interviews for the Constitutional Court because in terms of the Constitution, they have to give a list of 2 candidates more than there are vacancies. And we don't have enough people willing to put their name forward to be interviewed for the highest court in the country. And I think that's really shocking.
You've called for clear guidelines to be formulated in the questioning of candidates, as there's often been absolute inconsistency in the types of questions and even the duration of questioning, especially when it comes to things like what a particular candidate thinks of an issue like transformation. There seems to be a real inconsistency and kind of candidates sort of floundering, not sure how exactly to answer questions like that.
We found, especially with the issue of transformation, is that one, there's been this kind of conflation of the idea of increasing race and gender representation on the judiciary and promoting transformation. And those two aren't necessarily always the same thing. I think that's important to bear in mind. But there's also no agreement or no seeming agreement on the JSC on what either of those things requires of them. So, just in terms of transformation, the kinds of questions that people have been asked. I know there was a period where people were asked whether they spoke an African language, and that was seen as a determiner of their transformative value or input. But to us, I think the important thing is it needs to be your idea of transformation need be rooted in the Constitution. So a commitment to the transformative values of the Constitution, and howsoever the JSC should decide, that can be evidenced by candidates, is something that they need to kind of sit down and agree to, so that candidates know what it is they're being called on to answer.
And then evidence emerging during the state capture inquiry that the ANC Deployment Committee recommended specific candidates for judicial vacancies. Does that concern freedom under law, that a political party has its eye on certain people being appointed to certain courts?
Yes, I mean, that's a huge concern. And it's obviously difficult, because the JSC, although it's composed of the different arms of government, should strive toward being apolitical in a sense. It's one of the bodies that very importantly secures the independence of the judiciary by appointing members based on presumably guidelines to be developed, but their merits that as a judicial candidate. And it should be determined completely independently of what any one political party finds palatable or not. So the difficulty is when a member of a party goes to serve on the JSC, in an ideal world, they take off their party political hat and they focus on the best judicial appointment at the time. I know in reality that may be perhaps a bit naive or idealistic, but in any event, that is the ideal towards which they must strive.
The JSC, as a dispute resolution mechanism or body, through the Judicial Conduct Tribunal, there are cases, Kelly, that have taken, as you pointed out, or it was pointed out this morning, 14 years, and they still haven't reached conclusion. Surely this negates the whole notion of, you know, justice delayed is justice denied, when the JSC is so slow in doling out any sanction.
Yeah, I think for me that was probably one of the biggest things, is the disjunct between how the system seems to look on paper versus how the system works in practice. And I think that there is a whole lot of issues at play. One is the JSC's appetite to pursue the complaints with like the necessary vigor. I think in some instances it's lacking, as we've kind of seen. And then in other instances, it can also be a matter of capacity, because the judicial conduct, we're unclear on how many times a year they meet. And as I've also indicated this morning and in the report, they are all on the JSC by virtue of their very full-time positions on other, as academics, as attorneys, advocates, judges, members of parliament. And so the difficulty is there doesn't seem to be much infrastructural support to assist them. So complaints do either fall between the cracks or take forever to resolve. And I think ultimately the system requires a bit of an overhaul. But we've also suggested in our report certain proposals that can kind of be worked within the existing system to see if that creates any greater degree of efficacy.
You can tell me if this is something you can answer or not, but the courts, NGOs, civil society organizations, and the media, it was these bodies that held the line against state capture. The onslaught on all of these is perhaps expected, as those in power, you know, kind of sense their days of impunity are numbered. We've seen large number of attacks on judges and the courts and the Constitution. You know, should we expect this demonizing of the courts and the Constitution more and more the closer we kind of come to 2024? Are you able to answer something like that?
to the reckoning. I think, so obviously the report is kind of limited to looking at the appointing body, but the picture behind that is obviously, and the motivation for looking at the JSC in more detail, is the importance of the judiciary. We've seen time and again in our constitutional dispensation that they are kind of the final arbiters of constitutional rights. And it is so important who judges are. And everyone should care who judges are. And so as a result, everyone should care who appoints judges, because they're kind of the last line of defense. And I do think they've been subject to attack. And I do think that there is a chance of it increasing. And I do think that's all the more reason for protecting the integrity of the judiciary. And that requires a functioning body that both appoints appropriate candidates, and two, make sure that when those judges step out of line, there's expeditious resolution of those complaints.
Has your report landed on the president's desk?
I would have to check with Judith on that one, but I know it was sent to the Chief Justice.
Okay.
And so I'm sure it will find its way.
Kelly, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael.